This is episode 121 of the Nursing Home Abuse Podcast, 5 Ways to Prevent Pressure Ulcers. The Nursing Home Abuse Podcast is dedicated to providing news and information for families whose loved ones have been injured in a nursing home. Here are your hosts, Georgia attorneys Rob Schenck and Will Smith. Hey out there, welcome back. My name is Rob Schenck.
And I'm Will Smith.
Today we have a very informative episode about a common problem in many nursing homes across the country, and that problem is pressure ulcers, mm-hmm. also known as bed sores. Wounds that occur oftentimes, not every time, mm-hmm. oftentimes, as a result of prolonged pressure and weight on a particular part of the body. For example, mm-hmm. a heel, the buttocks, shoulder blade, elbow.
As opposed to other types of ulcers, there are venous ulcers, there are diabetic ulcers, there are ulcers that are cancer caused by cancer. We're talking specifically about ones that are
pressure related,
that are related to gravity. Gravity is the culprit.
Correct.
Yeah.
So, but we don't do this feat alone. We have a ultra special guest, a two-time guest. We had this mm-hmm. particular guest on episode 95 back in November of 2018, talking about MDS reports, but today she's talking about pressure ulcers. Who do we got, Will?
We have Nurse Margot Craig. She's a registered nurse and a legal nurse consultant who founded Century Medical Legal Services over 10 years ago. With over 30 years of nursing experience, combined with criminal justice and forensic studies, she's uniquely equipped to investigate and develop medically related legal claims for her attorney clients. Her clinical background includes many diverse practice areas with concentrations in long-term care, with infusion therapy, labor, delivery, nursery, and oncology nursing as well. Early in her nursing career, Margot was appointed quality assurance director of a large hospital. She was responsible for the development and implementation of ongoing quality assurance activities based on standards established for accreditation by the Joint Commission and State Health Department. This experience working with physicians and hospital staff and later in nursing home administration has given her significant insight into the potential for improving the quality and safety of patient care. So she is has a very diverse background, and we're very happy to have her on today.
Margot, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for asking me to join you.
All right.
A pleasure to be here and discuss this important topic for public health.
Yes, ma'am. You hit the nail right in the head. Pressure ulcers, this is a problem that we see a lot, unfortunately. Many of our clients go into nursing homes without skin conditions, and they leave with life-threatening skin conditions. So this is good to have an episode dedicated to mm-hmm. talking about what pressure ulcers are and how we actually prevent them from ever occurring. So we're really happy that you came here. But as you know already, our audience is generally composed of family members who have – or residents – excuse me. I always mess that up – of families who have someone in a nursing home. A family member in a nursing home. I don't know why I always get my nouns confused. But anyway, from a 40,000 foot view, can you tell us what a pressure ulcer is?
Well, a pressure ulcer is sometimes called a bed sore. That's kind of the history of what we called them when I was growing up. And even some people I've talked to lately, when I talk about a pressure ulcer, they get this puzzled look. And when I say, oh, it's a bed sore, I'm like, oh, okay. So our terminology has changed a little bit mm-hmm. because we know that pressure is a component, but there's other things that can make the skin break down, and all those things kind of go together. But basically, pressure, we sometimes call pressure injury because it depends on what the original source of the wound is. But mm-hmm. a pressure injury is a wound to the skin and underlying tissue that develops from prolonged pressure and reduced blood flow to the skin. So we know the skin's got to have nutrients and oxygen with good blood flow to stay healthy. And when the pressure is on, that compromises that system.
And so, so that we understand you correctly, when you say when the pressure's on a part of the body, we literally mean the body is applying the pressure, as opposed to, like, you know, your arm is laying there and you've got, you know, a cooler of beer laying on it or something. Like, we're literally talking about the pressure points of the body.
Right. So our body weight causes pressure over prominent bones. Mm-hmm. So if someone's laying down, the weight is a little more distributed, but you still can have pressure ulcers for someone who's laying down. For someone who's up in a wheelchair, think about all that weight from the upper body pressing mm-hmm. down on the tailbone area.
Yeah.
The areas that are most frequently affected are the tailbone area. We call, you know, the coccyx is the tailbone. The sacrum is part of that whole system. Mm-hmm. The part of the pelvis that gets skin pinched between the chair or the bed and develops this, you know, significant reduction in blood flow. The hips, the elbows, the heels, and the shoulder blades are the most common areas. And then it can even happen, I've even seen some starting on the bony parts of the spine that can show through on a really thin person. The ankles, knees, head, and even the ears. So any place that you can touch your body and feel a bone, you don't have to be thin. You can actually, overweight people can have just as much trouble because they have more weight pressing their own body against the surface where their bone is creating that tension on the skin.
Right. And so due to that pressure, the underlying tissue and muscle has difficulty receiving the blood from the body, which carries the nutrients, which carries the oxygen. And over time, right. Those tissues and that muscle deteriorate, the wound opens up, and you have basically a gaping wound in the skin.
That's a very good summary of what actually happens, yes.
Right. So that is the actual injury. That's kind of how they develop. In a skilled nursing setting where you have a variety of residents, you've got residents that are 500 pounds, you've got residents that are 100 pounds and type 2 diabetic, some have cancer, some, you know, are 85 years plus. So you're dealing with a lot of different variables for the prevention of pressure ulcers. Can you walk us through the title of the episode is 5 ways to prevent pressure ulcers, but I know that there's probably a lot more than that. But can you walk us through what are some of the principal means, given the variety of people that you have in a nursing home, what are some of the basic means that you have to prevent this type of wound?
Right. Well, it's you describe, you know, exactly what you see. There's a wide range of conditions of people who are in long-term care, and many of them have come from the hospital where their wounds actually got started. So the tool that they use for prevention starts with assessment.
And that's a good point. You
need to identify risk factors so that you can plan for how to prevent them. So we have assessment requirements by Medicare and Medicaid that regulate nursing homes and tell them it needs to be done on admission at certain scheduled intervals and with any change in condition. So the assessments are structured to identify the risk factors that should help the staff plan for what to do. But, you know, that's just, that's a baseline. That's a minimum starting point. You really need to use good clinical judgment to find out what's really the most significant things about a person. Like you said, if you have someone who's 500 pounds, that's going to be their biggest challenge is the amount of weight that's pressing down on their bony mm-hmm. prominences, and their circulation is going to be impaired in general because of that. Mm-hmm. So the tools help us assign a score that will highlight the need and also kind of quantify how significant is it? How, to what lengths do we need to go to prevent?
That makes sense. Now, and as the first tool being the assessment, can you go a little bit into, we sometimes on the show we talk about the Braden score. Sometimes we talk about other types of assessments. Is there a particular type of assessment that you find that is effective or
more reliable or
that you
cutting
prefer?
Edge?
Well, I kind of cut my teeth on Norton, but the most common one is Braden, and they're both very valid, very very commonly used, and all of them pretty much do the same thing. Mm-hmm. They just help us organize our thoughts and focus in on the most important aspects of prevention. The total score is meaningful. It kind of tells you if you've got the lowest, a really low score, that's bad. Just like in school, if you get an F, that's bad. But it's a general screen. It's not specific enough to a resident to be the be all and end all of, oh, well, if Braden says this, then this is what we need to do. You've really got to look at the individual and all of the things that are going on to make your decisions about planning for prevention.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense. And the assessments, no matter what they are taking into account multiple factors, the mental cognition of the patient, the ability for them, even the ability for them to move themselves, these type of things, psychological components. Like, can you walk us through a couple of those categories?
So you want me to talk about the risk factors that have an impact on these
wounds? Sure.
Okay. So the most important one is immobility.
Okay.
And you know, our main goal here is to educate people about how do I know how to help my loved one? How do I know how to intervene if I don't know anything about pressure ulcers? Mm-hmm. So you know your loved one best. You know, like in my own family, my elders want to sit in their normal chair and do crossword puzzles and watch their specific shows, and they have a rhythm for their days, and that may mean they're in the same place for 4 hours because they're busy. They got stuff to do, and they're not as mobile as they used to be because their joints hurt. Mm. Well, so there you have this normal activity level, but as they age, they're not eating well, and so their tissues aren't tolerating that same length of time in one position. They have decreased sensation or pressure, so they're not moving because they don't really perceive that there's a problem. And their nutritional status is down. So you have, then as things progress, you have people who have cognitive problems. Their thinking isn't like it used to be. We can have minor changes from just normal, what we used to call hardening of the arteries, but the blood vessels aren't working as well as they used to, either from heart disease or general vessel disease or brain vessel disease. Mm-hmm. So they're not making these connections that I need to move. They may have neurologic problems with dementia, Parkinson's, stroke, those kinds of things. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, in a nursing home, we have people with spinal cord injuries, people who just are no longer as sharp as they were to know to move and possibly physically can't. So those are the ones most at risk, especially if they're sitting in a wheelchair. So if they can't significantly change position on their own, you've got to do it for them.
Right. Well, that makes sense.
So those are the ones with the highest level of risk, but there's lots of intermediate reasons as well.
I gotcha. So that's some of the things that you factor into the assessment. And that's the assessment, as you mentioned, is kind of like the first and best tool to prevent these. So what's next? What's number two on the,
right?
Well, I want to point out something that she said that she's talking about. That's important that this can happen
outside of a bed.
Right? Yeah.
We call these bed sores, but it's important for people to remember that that's just a colloquial term.
And that's
it can
the
happen,
thing.
Yeah, anytime.
And Will and I are guilty of that, even though this is our area of the law, in the sense that there's a misconception that bed sores occur only in bed, and there's a misconception about the fact that just because you have an open wound on your body where there could be some pressure, that it is in actuality a pressure wound. So we might be saying bed sore when it's a vascular ulcer, things like that.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
we're doing a better job of educating the public on those things. But yeah, that's a good point, Will.
So as you said, there are other reasons to develop a wound, and there's sometimes combination reasons, which is generally what I see in my practice.
Mm-hmm.
You'll have someone who's diabetic or has severely impaired circulation who also is immobile. And so they've got a double whammy. They're not getting good blood flow from their diseases. And then they're also immobile. So their pressure points are breaking down.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have the perfect storm, because once it starts, it's super hard to heal those folks. So we really do want to focus on prevention.
Yeah, gotcha. So what are some things that people can do who have to sit for long periods of time? Like, for example, my mother is quadriplegic. She has to sit. She can't get up and move around. So is it just as simple as shifting your weight, as moving around, or are there creams that you can use?
Right. So, just in general, when we're at home, if we have dry skin, we're going to put on some type of lotion to help with that. In the elderly, they need that even more. But they also have to be kept really clean without using harsh soaps.
Okay.
So you've got people, if they're immobile, where their skin is against the bedding, there's probably going to be moisture from, just body heat and condensation.
Mm-hmm.
And so for those people, like your mother, who are really not able to move, you've got to jump in with both feet and get a specialized mattress that allows for air circulation as well as decreased pressure to the bony point. So you get them on a surface that's going to help support them, whether it's a wheelchair or a bed, and keep the skin as clean as possible without scrubbing them down and removing all their own body oils constantly.
Right.
So it's a balancing act.
Yeah.
Moisturize, and especially for families, you want to inspect those areas. So I recommend visiting at different times during the day, because you're going to see different levels of care with staffing based on what that particular shift is being asked to accomplish. You've got meal time and bath time to consider. You've got activities that are happening, group activities. So there's a lot going on at different times of day, and you want to make sure that the rhythm of the day is not throw everybody in a wheelchair for breakfast and leave them there until dinner.
So
they need to have significant position changes. If they are in a wheelchair, they need to, nursing homes need to develop programs for how to help people change position. If they're able to use their arms or shift their weight, they can be leaning over at different times. They can lift up with their hands. And one of the things I've seen, especially in the last several months, I think maybe it just didn't register with me before, but a lot of injuries happen from falls, and residents are falling out of their wheelchair. Well, just think about why. Why are they falling out of that wheelchair? They've been sitting on their tail, and their body tells them, get off me.
Yeah.
I can't breathe. And so they lean forward, and out they go.
And I think, go ahead.
Well, it's just important, even you know, for people who don't have the thinking ability any longer to reposition themselves, we as caregivers and family members and nursing home staff have to find creative ways to make that happen. And if that means every time you walk down the hall, you know, stop in and say, hey, it's time to lean over. You know, it can be so simple, but it's got to be intentional and frequent.
And so, Margo, if I understand you correctly, some of these, the five ways of preventing, the first one was the assessment. Then I believe you mentioned various devices like mattresses to alleviate pressure from one spot for long periods of time. The other one was literally just position changes, which is what you were just talking about. But the other one was preventing moisture. Can you kind of talk about why moisture is dangerous?
Well, when skin is wet, it rots. I'm sorry, there's no easy, gentle way to say that.
Right.
It becomes red. It, you know, when you've been in the bath too long, your toes get mm-hmm. pruney. Well, your bottom gets pruney where your diaper is holding urine against you as well. So mm-hmm. wet and urine are the two most common ways that the skin can get spongy and mushy. And then that leads to further injury, whether it's from pressure or from scraping and scooting. So keeping it clean and dry and keeping moisture off of it is the best way, especially in the diaper area. When you have urine combined with feces, those two things have a chemical reaction together. It can really burn the skin. So you got to make sure that diaper is changed as soon as there is stool in it and, mm-hmm. you know, as often as possible when it's wet.
And you mentioned earlier that if you're going to use moisturizer, or not moisturizer, I'm sorry, if you're going to clean those areas, non-abrasive ones, like what's the difference between an abrasive soap or abrasive cleaner and a non-abrasive mm-hmm. one? Why is that important?
Well, you know, some people react to different soaps. Mm-hmm. You've got to make sure you've got a product that isn't causing a rash or redness or, you know, itching. There are products recommended by manufacturers and vendors to healthcare providers that specifically are designed to be gentle in that way. Mm-hmm. And just making sure that it's thorough without being harsh.
Mm-hmm. I see.
I think another important thing that she's pointed out is inspection, just checking your loved one out. Cause I know that we've had several cases where the family, you know, an individual died of a terrible, terrible bed sore, stage 4. And I remember, you know, the family saying we had never seen that before. We didn't realize it was there. So just, mm-hmm. you know, I mean, these come in stages, so that's, you know,
right.
If you go to a nursing, if your loved one's in a long-term care setting, check their body, you know, look them over. Maybe the staff isn't doing that. Yeah.
Yeah. And if they are, it may not be communicated in a timely manner.
Right.
And these wounds can develop, honestly, very quickly. They can go from just what seems like a little bruise to a gaping wound in really just hours to days.
Yeah.
So it's important to inspect, but just think about the invasion of privacy. You have to use, you know, discretion if there's someone
Absolutely.
Who is alert.
Yeah.
You can't just say, hey, let me look in your pants.
Right.
So there's diplomatic ways
sure.
to partner with the resident. But I think one of the best ways is to help with that. Like, mm-hmm. you seem sweaty. Can I wash your back? And you can just use a wet washcloth. You don't have to use soap to wash someone's back. Mm-hmm. But that gives you a chance to look, you know, from the waist up.
Yeah.
Then you can help take someone to the bathroom. A lot of nursing home patients can get up and go to the bathroom, but they spend most of their time sitting or laying down. So when you are the one helping them do that, you're in the room when they're getting ready to sit on the potty, and you can just, you know, glance. You don't have to be real obvious about it. And then the heels is another area that family members get surprised by, I didn't know that was there. Mm-hmm. Because when they see their loved ones, they're already up and dressed.
Yeah.
And so that's another thing that you can offer to do. Come in before it's time to get dressed, and you be the one to see those feet before they're dressed. Or even if you can't come early, you know, come late, help them get ready for bed. And, you know, during that dressing opportunity, that's when you can see more areas of exposed skin.
That's right. Smart. Yeah. So aside from that, what are some other things, Margo, that families can do to help prevent pressure ulcers from developing on their loved ones in nursing homes?
Right. So another important aspect of skin health is nutrition fluid intake. Mm-hmm. And so a very important part of a good prevention program includes monitoring body weight, labs that will reveal whether or not there's enough protein in the diet, whether or not there's enough electrolytes to support good skin health. So that's something that would happen. I guess we haven't talked yet about ways families do interact with nursing homes in a team approach. I know in your other broadcasts, you've talked about these care planning meetings or interdisciplinary team meetings that happen where social workers, dietitians, therapists, nurse aides, and nurses get together and talk about, and therapists get together and talk about the issues with the family. So at that would be a good time to go over what's the weight, how often are we weighing. You may visibly see weight loss in your loved one, like their face looks thinner, their skin looks dry, their mouth looks dry. Even as far as, you know, there's no armpit sweat because someone's so dehydrated they can't sweat.
Oh, wow, yeah.
So there's, you know, if you pinch the skin and it stays up in a tent instead of quickly returning, that's going to happen to a certain extent with elderly or sick people. But you know when there's been a change.
Yeah.
And so they've got to have adequate intake. And dietitians are good at developing interventions. Nursing home staff, not necessarily so good at implementing them. You're going to have to stay on top of, you know, how much did they take in today? How have they been doing this week? Have they been eating all their meals, or are they leaving some food? And the best way to do that is just to show up at mealtime and see if they're just sitting there staring at that tray.
That's right. And make sure that
instead of eating it.
Yeah, make sure that tray has protein on it.
I mean, this clearly happens a lot because there are attorneys like us out here. Yeah. So, you know, it's a problem. Yeah.
And with regard to labs, really quickly, Margo, I mean, we'll have to get in the weeds with this, but is it fair to say that you're looking at blood sugar levels? In making sure that if blood sugar levels are high, then that means that if there is a wound, that it's going to have problems healing.
Well, that is part of what we call a basic metabolic panel. And that measures blood sugar, oxygenation, kidney function, as well as measures of good nutrition. So it's all right there in front of you if you know what you're looking at, but family members often don't. But the dietitians everyone I've met are just wonderful educators, and they love for people to ask questions that give them the opportunity to share in understanding what's really going on.
Right. Well, great. Well, Margo, I've been keeping count, okay? Because again, I don't want to lie to the audience. This is five ways to prevent pressure ulcers. Number one, assessing the risk. Number one. Number two, we got preventing moisture. Number three, we have the use of devices like mattresses or maybe boot heels. We have number four, physical position changes. So that's either literally doing it yourself, or maybe running past in the hallway and saying, "Hey, Mrs. Johnson, you know, roll over. It's, you know, for 15 minutes." And then five is the family participation and the family monitoring of all things pressure related. So nutrition, making sure that you're taking part in the care plans, that type of thing.
And I think it should be noted, these are not the only.
Not the only. We should put a disclaimer out there. This is just five, you know, the five ways.
Big one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We'll have five more next time with Margo.
Well, and those family members are just incredibly important to inspire nursing homes to pay good attention to their loved ones. If you're paying good attention to them, you're going to have better outcomes from the staff. Mm-hmm. And if something happens and you don't, you may need to be the one to advocate for getting a consultation with a certified wound nurse or a wound physician, because nursing homes have persons allocated to wound care, but they have a lot of other responsibilities, and they're not as highly trained as wound specialists. So you may need to advocate for that, even to the point of making an appointment and providing transportation to make it happen.
There you go.
So be that advocate. Stand up and find out what you can about your loved one's risk factors, what you know is being done, and be part of the solution. Be there, offer to help, learn how to turn safely yourself, and advocate for nutrition, cleanliness, and proper skin care.
It's all fantastic information. Margo, if somebody's out there and want to get a hold of you, how do they do that?
I'm just so available. my website is Sentry, that's Sentry. LegalNurse.com, and that has all my contact information on it. My email is CenturyLegalNurse@gmail.com, and my phone is 256-426-8371.
And also,
I'm very happy to help.
And also, Margo is one of the few guests that we have that has a Twitter handle, and that Twitter that Twitter handle is @LegalNurse5. So if you're out there in the Twitterverse, shoot her a tweet. So, but Margo, thank you.
I would love to hear from you.
Great. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show, Margo. It's been fantastic having you on again. Maybe in the future we'll get you to come back on. You'll be a kind of like a reoccurring guest, you know, we'll get you
I would be so happy to come back. It's always a pleasure to speak with you, and you all are doing such good work to help the public understand what's going on, so we can all be advocating for solutions.
Awesome. Well, appreciate you.
Thank you.
Awesome. Thanks, Margo.
All right. Thank you.
Bye-bye. Yeah, Margo is fantastic. She definitely knows what she's doing. And I like having her on because she's very, like, very thorough, very good, great information. And I just FYI, what was I going to say? June 6th is the anniversary of what?
Of the invasion of Normandy.
That's right. The invasion of Normandy on behalf of the Allies, not the Normans.
Not 1099, the invasion of Normandy.
1066. But that's okay. And that's the Battle of Hastings. That's the Normans. We completely messed it up because that's actually the Normans invading.
William the Conqueror.
Yeah, England.
Yeah.
Battle of Hastings, 1066.
That's the beginning of the French-speaking England.
That's
for
right.
For a while.
And the legal system.
And that's why we have so many silly words like thought, with most of the letters are silent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, a little bit of history for you.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I think it's also my niece's birthday. I think she was born June 6th or June 5th. Because I remember thinking, oh, that'll be easy to remember because it's on D-Day. But apparently I don't remember if it was on D-Day or right before it.
Anyway. Yeah. That's going to conclude this episode of the Nursing Home Abuse Podcast. You can get new episodes every Monday morning wherever you get your podcast, or you can watch the podcast on YouTube or our website, which is nursinghomeabusepodcast.com. And with that, we will see you next time.
See you next time.
See you next time.
Thanks for tuning in to the Nursing Home Abuse Podcast. Nothing said on this podcast, either by the host or the guest, should be construed as legal advice, nor is intended to create an attorney-client relationship between the host or their guest and the listener. New episodes are available every Monday on Spotify, iTunes, Stitcher, or on your favorite podcast app, as well as on YouTube and our website, nursinghomeabusepodcast.com. Again, that's nursinghomeabusepodcast.com. See you next time.